be honest, I had so much in this PowerPoint this morning. I pulled out, and I already have my teaching in 2 weeks of this concept or this theme. So what we start today, we're not done with. Much of what I'll cover today is spoken from Paul or someone else's voice. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be covering the same basic concept from Yeshua's words. How he perceived himself. What change did he make? The hard part today is we live in a world where the cross Yeshua died on, the blood that he shed, has been bottled, and pastors come to churches and sell it like salesmen did a long time ago on carts. Oh, it'll fix baldness. It will fix aches in your bones. It's going to help you with feeling depression, with the acne. We've used it as a solution, saying that it fixed all problems. And we share it sometimes, sitting back, sort of feeling uncomfortable, telling people how it's changed our life, and yet we're still walking in sin, struggling with the same problems. Mm-hmm. It's been said that it changed completely praise and worship, and they make a point because the veil was torn, unknowing that the ark was not in the temple at the time. So was it really a holy of holies? You could walk now into an empty room? What use was that? And you think, or we think today, somehow we have a closer relationship with Yahweh because Yeshua came. I will tell you, every day I pray and hope that I have the relationship Moses had, the relationship Abraham had, the relationship Elijah had. So if Yeshua changed that, what was here before? If praise and worship is so much better today, how come I see all of this praise that David crying and screaming and yelling, dancing around like a fool because he couldn't contain himself? But somehow we can praise him better today because it's post the cross, post the blood. But the problem and the fear, and we should always take it with trepidation, with slowness, concern, is we're talking about bedrocks we all stand on. Those don't get moved in a day. Those don't get replaced in a day. If they do, I promise you, the truth will get in, you won't know the truth, and you'll throw it out with all their other bedrocks. So what we put in its place better be the truth. And we better start from the simplest little truth and build. Because in that, we can understand, why did Yeshua come? What did his blood, what did it do? What did it change? What was the significance? Now again, I can't cover the depth of all this, but we can start today. Mm-hmm. Ephesians 2:14 through 16 says this: For he is our peace, that we made the two one. I need you to hold on that concept. He has destroyed the barrier. Now Paul's going to use a metaphor here multiple times. A barrier, the dividing wall of the enmity, by abolishing in his flesh the enmity of the law and its commandments and regulations. Mm-hmm. His purpose was to create in himself one new man out of two, thus making peace, shalom, in this one body to reconcile, this means to fix, it's a fancy word for to fix, both of them to Yahweh through the tree by which he put to death the enmity. Now again, I want to go back. Some of your scriptures, I love the NIV. They said, you know what? We don't need to put enmity here. So it says to abolish in his flesh the law. Huh. I love how they took out enmity. Total difference there. If you throw out enmity, then keeping enmity. Now, enmity is not something we go around walking going, oh yeah, be careful about strife and enmity. It's not a word we use that often. So quite often you're like, I have no idea what he's talking about. I have a general idea. Enmity has two definitions. One is separation. The other is hostility or aggression. The best way I can explain it to you is, let's say me and Thatcher have a struggle over an idea or a concept, and let's say we're brothers, which, by the way, we are spiritually, and I won't talk to him. I won't go near him. Why? I won't acknowledge him. Why? Because there is aggression, hostility between us, creating a barrier, separation between us. Mm-hmm. So it says, Yeshua destroyed the barrier, the wall, the enmity of the law. But what is that? What does it mean? Because he's trying to tell us the whole purpose of what Yeshua changed. Turn with me to Hebrews chapter 9. Hebrews chapter 9. We're going to look first at verses 1 through 15. At first, we're going to be talking about the sanctuary, and you're going to be like, I really don't see how this has bearing. Okay? You're going to be like, I'm reading it. I see what you're saying, but how does this have to do with what Yeshua changed? You're going to be patient with me. You're going to hold on to this, because we will come back, and you're going to see this puzzle piece drop in, maybe where you've never seen it. And I don't know about you, but when I saw it, it was, ooh. Again, it was, for me, it was incredible. We'll see for you. You can tell me afterwards. Hebrews 9, starting with verse 1. And indeed, even the first covenant had ordinances, this is at Sinai, of divine service, the earthly sanctuary. For a tabernacle was prepared, the first part, in which was the lampstand, the menorah, the table, the showbread, which is called the sanctuary. And behind the second veil, see, each veil was a barrier, okay, a wall. And part of the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, was the golden censer. This is where incense smoke would go up. And the Ark of the Covenant, overlaid on all sides with gold, in which were the golden pot, which had the manna. Aaron's rod that budded, the tablets of the covenant, and above all was a cherubim of glory over the shadowing the mercy seat. Now I need you to hold on to that concept. The cherubim were on top, and between the cherubim was the mercy seat. Of these things we cannot speak, of now we can speak in detail. Verse 6, now when these things had been thus prepared, the priests always went into the first part of the tabernacle, this is the holy place, performing services. But into the second part of the high priest went alone once a year. And he didn't go very far, by the way. Not without blood, which he offered for himself and for the people's sins committed in ignorance. That, of course, says that you can only atone for that which you weren't aware of. Unknown sin or unaware sin. The Holy Spirit indicating that where the holiest of all was not yet made manifest, while the first tabernacle was still standing. It was symbolic for the present time, which both gifts and sacrifices are offered, which cannot make him who performed the service perfect. Now the word here, could not make it complete. In regard to the conscience, occurred only with foods and drinks, various washings, fleshly ordinances imposed upon the time of Reformation. But Messiah came as a high priest of good things to come, the greater, more complete tabernacle, not made with hands, that is not of the creation, with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood. He entered the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of the bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifies for the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Messiah, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without a spot, without a blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? And for this reason, he is the mediator of a renewed covenant by means of death for the redemption of the transgressions under the first covenant. So there's a problem with the first covenant, that those who are called may receive the promise of the eternal inheritance. Hold on to that phrase, promise of the eternal inheritance. Now, to be honest, I could keep reading. We don't have time to read a whole chapter. We can jump to chapter 10, verses 1 through 7. For the law, again, this phrase, having a shadow of the good things to come. Notice it didn't say have come, to come. And not very image of things, have never with these same sacrifices, which they offer continually year by year, make those approach complete or perfect. For then would they not have ceased to be offered? Meaning if they completed the task, why keep doing them? Now there's a problem. You realize he's talking about Day of Atonement. Part of that problem is we keep what? Sinning. So if we keep sinning, we have to keep looking for atonement. Mm-hmm. For the worshipers once purified would have no more conscience of sin. But in those sacrifices, there's a remainder of sin every year. For it's not possible that the blood of the bulls and goats could take away sins. Now, let me explain it real quick. Torah says an eye for an eye and a tooth for tooth. This is quite often misinterpreted. Yahweh is setting up a simple law of balance. And what he's saying is, your crime should be balanced out your punishment. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth. And he didn't mean it for revenge. Oh, you did that for me? Now I get to do it to you. No. Revenge is whose? Yahweh's. No. You were to meant to love even if they did something to you. This was not about retribution. It was about justice. So the point being is, while Yahweh allowed animals to be sacrificed, they were no way equal to, because that, is that an eye for an eye? No, that animal doesn't have free will. So the animal would be temporary, but because it had no free will, it was blameless. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So for a time, it could be used. But what he's saying here is it didn't balance out the equation. It didn't work. An animal did not weigh out the sin of a man. Mm-hmm. Only a man would do that. He continues, verse 5, therefore when he came into the world, he said, sacrifices and offerings you did not desire, but a body you prepared for me. In burnt offerings and sacrifices for sin you have no pleasure. And I said, behold, I have come in the volume of the book it is written of me to do your will, O God. Now I'm going to stop there. The point of this, you're like, well, Yahweh set up the sacrifices. Why doesn't he want them? Because Yahweh doesn't want you to sin. He didn't give you the sacrifices. You go, you know what? It doesn't matter how much I sin. I can always give the offerings. He doesn't desire sacrifices. Oh, yay! They gave me a sacrifice. He desires you to do right. So he doesn't get joy in the sacrifice. Doesn't make sense. All right. So, Genesis 3. Let us start the journey of building this picture of which Yahweh, I pray, through these verses, verse by verse, line on line, he will build the picture for you. Genesis 3, most of you have this memorized. That's okay. Start with verse 1. Actually, I want to jump one verse. I'm going to go back one verse. So if you're in chapter 2, I'm going to start with verse 25. This is man and woman, and they were both naked. Now, put that picture out of your mind. The point is, they had no covering, no atonement. The man and his wife, and they felt no shame. They didn't need it. There was no sin. They had accepted Yahweh's word. They hadn't broken it. No big deal. No shame. Well, that changes. 3. Now the serpent was more cunning than the beast of the field, which Yahweh had made. He said to the woman, "Has God indeed said you shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" Now what he's doing is he's twisting the words around in her mind to try and confuse her. What he's saying is, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden, because he says you can eat of all the trees. But of one tree you can't eat. But he's trying to get her confused with all trees and the one tree. And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat the fruit of the tree of the garden, but the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die." Now we've talked about this in the past. I believe Adam created this. Because God told man not to eat of the tree, or you'll die, before man was separated into man or woman. And notice that Eve's point is, God said. Well, we don't see that God said it, so who told her that God said it? Because if she made it up, she would have said, "Well, I think he meant this." But he didn't say that. Mm-hmm. So notice already that man has done what to the word? Corrupted it. Man has made himself equal to God because he's able to change the word. Verse 4, the serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die, for God knows the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil." The woman saw the tree was good for food, it's pleasant to the eyes, and the tree was desirable to make one wise. By the way, all those characteristics, knowing good from evil, making one wise, that's Torah. Now, if you know Torah, you know that any fruit tree that is planted, you can't just eat of it in the first few years. There's a temporary ban on eating of the tree. Mm-hmm. Most probably, this tree had a temporary ban on it. The problem is they're going to touch it and eat of it, which is going to taint the tree. Just like in Torah, if we were reading it to find a perfect person, every time man sinned, they would taint Yahweh's word, right? Because we would not have an example to look at in the word to know how to live. Mm-hmm. To make one wise. He took the fruit. She took it, and that's important because it showed that she didn't die. So that's why she ate it. So man's commands caused her to break Yahweh's commands. She also gave her husband, who was with her, so he's watching. And he ate. And the eyes of the both of them were opened. What it means here is that they was revealed to them. In one moment, they felt convicted. Their eyes were opened. And they knew that they were without a covering. And of course, they go off to make a covering of their own. Because it is so important that they have a covering. Why? Because they know Yahweh is going to come. Yahweh comes and speaks with them. He walks among them. So they're like, and they're hiding. They're hiding. I'm jumping to verse 20. And Adam called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living. Also for Adam and his wife, Yahweh made tunics of skin. To do this, most probably, he could have just created skin, but most probably he killed an animal to do this. And skinned it. So here's our first sacrifice. Now they're supposed to die. They corrupted his word. They sinned. They should die. Yahweh gave them mercy. He gave them a covering of skin. He shed blood to provide them the covering. Then Yahweh said, "Behold, the man has become like one of us to know good and evil. And now let us put out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and live forever." Therefore Yahweh sent him out of the garden to till the ground from which he was taken. So he drove out man and he placed cherubim. I need you to hold on to this concept. He placed the cherubim on the east of the garden with a flaming sword and turned every way to guard the way of the tree of life. So notice here some concepts that are important things. There's a corrupted tree. The corrupted tree is a corrupted word or covenant that was supposed to be made with God, with Elohim, who corrupted it. Man. Realized they needed a covering. It was significant. They felt a feeling they never felt before, which was shame. Yahweh gave them a covering of skins. It was temporary, more permanent than their fig leaves. But you know what? It's still flesh. And we know all flesh is breaking down on a daily basis. It's still temporary, and he didn't kill them. He gave mercy in giving of the covering. Of the sacrifice, he allowed mercy. Because you know what? This doesn't actually equal what you did, but you know what? I love you so much, I'm giving you mercy to keep going. Because I don't want to kill you. Extremely important. The cherub guards the way to the tree of life. This means that this garden represents this place that Yahweh can meet with us very closely. He walks with us. He speaks with us. Notice that they're not kicked out of the garden because of sin. They're kicked out of garden because Yahweh is afraid they're going to eat of the tree of life and live forever. Why? Because now a barrier is up between Yahweh and man of hostility and separation because of sin. And the cherubim is actually guarding so that man does not go in, eat of the tree, and live forever away from God. So Yahweh's actually protecting. But see, Yahweh's also holy. And so if they enter, what could happen? He may not give mercy. He allows the separation to give you mercy. That is the mercy. I give you separation. But when you come to me, I have to judge. Turn to Genesis 15. Genesis 15. Again, we know this very well. Just starting with verse 1. After these things, the word of Yahweh came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield and exceedingly great reward. Shield is protection. Like, I'm going to put a shield up against anyone that comes against you, no matter when it comes. The great reward is he is the inheritance. Yahweh is our inheritance, which means we get him after someone's passing. Inheritance, reward. 8 through 13. After the promise, Abram says, Yahweh, how shall I know that I will inherit it? How will I know that I can actually meet that mark? So God said, bring me a 3-year-old heifer, a 3-year-old female goat, a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he brought these to him and cut them in two. Remember what we read? This is Yeshua would take the two and make it one new man, right? Well, one side of this animal would represent God's end of the covenant. The other side of the animal, the other half, would represent man's. They're what? Separated. There's a separation between them. He continues, and placed each the opposite of the other, but he did not cut the birds in two. And the vultures, and he kept the vultures from coming down. That's a whole other teaching. When the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon him. This deep sleep could be like death. Meaning, Abraham has no control over what could come against him right now or destroy him. And behold, a horror and great darkness fell upon him. And he said to Abram, know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and they will serve them, and they will afflict them for 400 years. And after that, I will come and judge them. Verses 17 and 18. It came to pass, then the sun went down, it was dark. Behold, there was appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between the two pieces. On that same day, Yahweh made a covenant with Abraham, saying, so what Yahweh is saying is, the oven is Yahweh. The burning torch is important. We hold a torch in our what? Our hand. You're going to go throughout Scripture. The word is always spoken of as the right hand of Yahweh. So the reality is that Yahweh's word would uphold his covenant, and Yahweh would uphold his covenant. What's important there is that Abraham is not in the picture. Yahweh's going to keep both sides. So to do this covenant of putting these animals back together, it has to be Yahweh and his word that actually accomplish it. The two become one. Shield and great reward we talked about. How will I attain to it? Animals cut in half, covenant sacrifices. Those are animal sacrifices. The great horror I believe that Abraham feels is the separation that he has from Yahweh. My interpretation. Deep sleep, important here is an idea of thought of death, but also the idea, because you see the later in scriptures, it says those who are asleep in Messiah shall rise. Also, it's the concept of night. Hold on to this concept of night when this is happening. Smoking oven and burning torch. So there's smoking and fire going on. Hold on to those basic pictures. Genesis 22. He continues a little further. Verses 1 and 2. It came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, he says, Hineni, here I am. What do you want? I'm here. He said, take now your seed, your only seed, Isaac, whom you love, and go to land of Moriah and offer him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I should tell you. Now, what you got to know about burnt offerings is you don't get any of them. Every part of the animal has to go in. It's what Yahweh is calling us to be, is a burnt offering here on earth, where our entire life is an offering before the world. Whatever this offering is going to be, it's a burnt offering, of which, by the way, you go back, fellowship offerings go on top of burnt offerings. Many other offerings go on top of burnt offerings. So if you don't have the burnt offering, you don't have any of the other offerings as well. Very significant. Verses 6 through 8. So Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac. He put all the wood on Isaac. So Isaac's carrying the tree, by the way. And he took the fire in his hand, that's Abram, and a knife. So the father has a knife. And two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abram, his father, and said, my father. He said, here I am, my son. Notice this conversation of father and son. He said, look, the fire, the wood, where's the lamb for the burnt offering? He knows there has to be a lamb. And Abram said, my son, God will provide for himself. Notice it is here that Yahweh will provide for himself a lamb for the burnt offering. And the two of them went together. These two men went up together. Verse 13 through 14. Abram lifted his eyes and looked. There behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it as a burnt offering instead of his son. Abram called the name of the place Yahweh provide, and it is said in this day that Mount Yahweh should be provided. Okay, real quick, let's go through these. The seed of the promise, not just specifically son. Seed can be a word. This is what Yeshua uses as a parable. Of a promise that was made already. Sacrifice the only son that you love. Laid the wood on Isaac. The father's purpose is I'm putting the tree. I have a problem with this tree. The tree is the wood of which the sacrifices are made of. There's a problem with the tree. Fire is meant to purify problems. I'm laying it on Isaac. My son is going to basically have to die for my sins. The animal's not good enough. The son will have to die because humans have to die for a human. Yahweh will provide for himself a lamb for a burnt offering. This offering has to be complete. All of it burned. You don't get a part of it. A priest doesn't get part of it. It all goes up. The ram is a substitute for the son that Yahweh already earlier had already put there, snagged, waiting. Now, Yahweh will provide is actually the name of the place. Okay? Hold on to that picture. Exodus 12, you don't need to go there. This is for you to go back and study. But watch the parallel. The eldest son must die in Egypt. Does it sound like Abraham? He must die for your sin. The father provides a substitute lamb so his son does not have to die. Who gave him the lamb? Yahweh. Yahweh provided the lamb so his son didn't have to die. The blood is placed on the doorposts. Yahweh passes over, thus gives judgment. He sees the blood on the portal, and he gives mercy. Because what he sees is that the people inside of the house recognize that there's sin. It has to be atoned for. The barrier has to be lifted between us. The one you put there. Blood must be spilled by an innocent. By a son. Exodus 19, 7, 13. Don't go there. We're just going to go through this. This is where they're setting up the Sinai. And when he sets it up, he goes through this process. He goes to the elders. Here are my commands. And what do the elders say? We accept them. Mm-hmm. Just like Adam and Eve, by the way, accepted the word, don't eat of the tree. We have a covenant, right? Mm-hmm. There was a boundary for the mountain. Sound like the boundary of the garden? And there was thunder, and there was fire, and there was smoke. Remember the reality of the covenant with Abraham, the oven and the burning torch? And if they crossed the boundary, because Yahweh is holy, what would happen? They would die. They had to purify their bodies and clean their clothing. The clothing is the covering they're wearing. It had to be purified and cleansed 3 days, and they could have no relations with their spouse. Now, this is important in regard to atonement, by the way. This may be a new lesson for couples. When it says you shall, whatever to the flesh, deny the flesh, part of denying the flesh is not having relations of which would make you unclean. So when we fast, it's more than just we're not eating food. Mm-hmm. Okay? Some people don't realize that. It's a bigger picture. But it's to purify the entire body. Exodus 25, we're getting to Hebrews now. It says, and let them make me a sanctuary. This is a place, by the way, now Yahweh goes, I want to make a place that I'm going to live with you now. Because remember, you lost the first place. But it's going to be a shadow of the real place. I will dwell among them according to all that I show you. That is the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of the furnishings, just so you shall make it. And he's going to see it in the heavens. So this barrier and this tabernacle is supposed to show us what is happening in the heavens, not here on earth. So if something's going to change, it's changing where? In the heavens. Tabernacle patterns. Quite interesting. The covering is made with goat skin. That would go over the tabernacle. Remember when Isaac was going to be sacrificed? What was sitting there? A ram. Provided by Yahweh as a what? A covering of skin. Tabernacle had a covering of skin. Goat is specific. The cherubim pattern was in the holy place, actually put in the material. Remember the cherubim? Their whole goal was to be at the garden with the sword of fire and to protect the boundary so man would not come in and eat of the tree and live forever, separating man from God. There's also two on the ark. And we could even go further. When you would go into the holy place, you would have to do incense, which would create smoke, which would go into the Holy of Holies, thus not able to see. Do you know what was between the two cherubim? Yahweh, on which was the mercy seat, of which we would throw the blood. So the cherubim were protecting the place where Yahweh was, and if we infringed on that place, we would die. Same message. Same message. Yahweh between the cherubim. The day of covering commands smoke and blood. Blood on the cover, the word, the covenant. So that when Yahweh looked down, because the word was underneath the mercy seat, the cover, and he looked down, he would see blood on top of the word. and go, you know what? The word asks for blood, life, and I see life, so I'm going to give mercy again. Mm-hmm. Just like I gave and I gave and I gave. Same thing. So what happened? The word became flesh, skin, a lamb, a skin that could be given to you to wear, but it's not an earthly skin. It's a heavenly body, but it can only be provided by that which was the torch, only provided by Yahweh himself. The Father provided his lamb. That means the lamb had to come from his kingdom. Mm-hmm. Where did the lamb come from? The word came from heaven. Yahweh sent it. Mm-hmm. The Father carried the knife. The Son goes, Father, if you can allow this to pass, get the word, it's Passover. If you can allow this cup to pass, mm-hmm. But you will be done. Right? So the Yahweh had the knife. He was the one taking him to slaughter. All of the people that did it are just actors in the play of what Yahweh's using. It all goes back to Yahweh wanted this to happen. The Son carried the tree. The tree represented the Word. The Word that man had tainted by adding his word to it. Mm-hmm. What did the word have to be done to it? It must be purified and it must be cleansed. But just from the outside? No. Blood and water spilled from the living Torah from the inside. Cleansing itself. Cleansing the covenant that was made in the first place with man. Messiah is the door of which the door bled. Remember Passover? Mm-hmm. The blood must be on the door. Mm-hmm. Well, the word was the barrier that kept us from living with God forever because there was a simple eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Justice had to be accomplished. It must be made complete. Perfect. Mm-hmm. It was not. Not till here. Revelation 2:22 through 22:5. You can go back and read it if you want to write it right now. What it will say is this. Yahweh and the Lamb are the temple. They are the place that we walk with Yahweh. That we find sanctuary. We find sanctuary in Him. You can't get any closer than that. You cannot get any closer. The gate shall not be shut. Shall not. The entrance, the only way you can enter is if your name is in the book of life. Mm-hmm. The only way, admittance, is by the book of life and whether your name is in it. You can go through parables. I didn't bring this up. Yeshua is one of the only times in his parables does he speak of the idea of someone standing at gates deciding who gets to go in and who doesn't get to go in. Go back and check out the requirements. But you know what that means? That means Yeshua opened the gates with his death. That Adam closed with Yahweh's mercy and life. Gates to what? So what are the gates to? To a pure river. And a tree of life that every year creates 12 fruits of which they can eat of and live forever, and there is no night, no darkness, No darkness. No night at all. And how long shall we live and reign? Forever and ever. So, what did Messiah change? I'm going to bring the exact same verse back. And I think you're going to see it differently this time. In Ephesians. For he is our peace. Peace between who and who? Yahweh and us. That made the two one from that covenant. And has destroyed the barrier, the divine wall of enmity, hostility and separation, by abolishing in his flesh, Torah made flesh, right? The enmity, hostility, aggression, distance, of the law and its commandments and regulations, because they expect perfection, completeness. His purpose was to create in himself one new man out of two, thus making peace, and in this one body, a new body, to reconcile both of them to Yahweh through the tree. The tree had to be restored, by which he put to death their enmity, the hostility that man created in the very beginning. So what did Yeshua change? I don't think he changed much here. Because what was here is a pattern of what is above. Mm-hmm. What he did in the heavenlies is without word. I cannot classify the reality that he opened the gates for us to actually be with Yahweh forever. What's cool too is what it shows is that Yahweh says, I'm your shield. So as I put you in a place to sleep, this is death, I will protect you until the day that I open the gates and bring you in. I'm going to protect you because you see, I'm your shield to protect you while you're still here. And I am your inheritance. I am what you get after you die. All and not part. What an incredible reality of Yahweh. What did Yeshua do? Incredible things for us. Incredible things for us. We now have a Torah and a person of Torah that is complete, that we can try and model our life after. The only sad part is we haven't done any better job than Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, or anyone else, even though we have a better picture than they did. But what's beautiful is that Yahweh has set it up in his word. This is not complicated. It's quite simple. But you know what? It's not all in one chapter either. It takes people who are going to go search what Yahweh has. The secrets of Yahweh. And when he reveals them, not complicated. They're simple. And they're awesome at the same time. Baruch Hashem.
Yevarecha Yahweh Vaishmerecha. Ke Yahweh Tibendiga Etipoteha. May Yahweh bless you and keep you. Yar Yahweh Panavedecha Vihunecha. Ke Yahweh Agasu Rosu Espendeser Soberti Ite Otoge Subandad. May Yahweh turn his face toward you and be gracious to you. Yisi Yahweh Panavedecha Vyasem Lecha Shalom. Que Yahweh muestre su rostro resplandecer sobre ti y te conceda su paz. May Yahweh turn his face towards you and grant you peace. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.